Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Looking for Love in All the Wrong Dust Jackets, a show where three disgruntled harpies talk to you about everything we love in romance, whether that's books, movies, TV shows, whatever we like. My name's Liz.
I'm Danny.
I'm Wiggles.
And welcome to the episode. Today, we are discussing the book The Duke Gets Desperate by Diana Quincy. But before we do that, I gots to warn the people. I gots to let them know that we are crass and unhinged, and we're going to swear at you, and we're going to talk about the bedroom activities. So I guess if you don't like that, you've been warned.
I mean, we're not going to swear at you. We're going to swear. There's a difference.
I will swear at you.
Oh, fair enough.
I swear at the world. Exactly. Fuck you, you fucking guy.
Okay. But tell me how you guys have been. What have you guys been up to? What have you been like reading or doing?
So I read two more of the what is it?
Improbable Meet Cute.
Improbable Meet Cute. Why do you know that and I don't know that? So I read Rosie and the Dreamboat, which was really fun. I enjoyed that one quite a bit. And then that one's by Sally Thorne. And I read Drop Cover and Hold On by Jasmine Gilroy, which was very nice. Very nice. I'm wiggling my eyebrows so you at home understand. It was very nice. And then I read That Time I Got Drunk and Yeeted a Love Potion at a Werewolf. Finally got back around to getting back into that series. It was fun. It kind of like jumped like very quickly to the end at the end of it and got a little bit silly. But up until that point, I was like, yeah, this is a good time.
I do remember the ending, and I remember being like, what's happening? How did we get here? Where are we going?
And the answers were not clear.
Nobody knows.
We just know they ended up happy, and that's the point. So, yeah. And that was by Kimberly Lemming, if you don't already know. And if you want to check out an episode we did on That Time I Got Drunk and
Saved a Demon.
We have an episode for that. So go check it out.
Just like looking at me with desperation. And I'm like, am I supposed to? Oh, I can help you.
You are supposed to help me. This is what you're here for. You're my emotional support, Liz.
Aw, that's nice.
I'll have to say something mean to compensate for it later. So.
Of course, obviously. If you don't say, if you don't tell me to fuck off at least once a day, what am I doing?
It's true. Yeah. All right. Well, not only did I listen to the audiobook for the book we're going to talk about, I also read two books in a three-book series. It's the Claws and Cubicles series.
Oh.
They're very short, but they're spicy as fuck.
Ooh.
So this one will make Liz especially laugh. The first one is called Live, Laugh, Lich.
Liches. Bitches.
And the other one is The Orc from the Office. They are both by Katie Pryor. There is another one that I have not read yet, but am planning to, because like I said, they're very short. Live, Laugh, Lich was 85 pages, and The Orc from the Office was like 133. The next one is The Gargoyle from General Accounting, or from General Management.
Oh, more gargoyles.
Sorry, I keep saying Live, Laugh, Lich. It's Love, Laugh, Lich. Love, Laugh, Lich is especially spicy. He has three things.
God damn.
Three of them.
There's the main one.
What do you need three for?
I'm explaining. Oh, there's okay. The main one. And then there's the one
you
under
got
that.
Hands. Put them to use.
He's got magical powers. He can make shit float. It's.
I got questions that I don't want the answers to.
Zero G sex, yo.
That's not the
and sex magic. There's quite a bit of sex magic in it.
It's not the question.
I gotta read this.
But so he's got the main one, and then there's the one underneath that you know exactly where it goes.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the top one that has like a suction thingy on it.
Oh, he's just a sex toy.
He is just a sex toy.
So like, is it smaller? Because otherwise it's just like, that's gonna have
yes
to
that
fold
one's
over
shorter
and
that one's shorter, and the under one is not as robust.
Round? Girthy?
That's a lot.
It is a lot. It was and it's quick because like I said, it's only 85 pages long.
Damn.
But yeah, it's awesome.
You find the most
I so I don't
unique things.
I was scrolling on Pinterest of all places and saw the orc in the orc from the office and was like,
we have different Pinterests.
And I was like, oh, okay, I'm gonna check that out. It's on Kindle Unlimited. If it's a dumpster fire, it's a dumpster fire, and I don't read it. And like, was it the best book in the world? No, but like, was I like, hi there, friend. But then I realized that it's not the first book in the series. And so like when I went searching for it on Kindle Unlimited, I was like, oh, well, this one's a lich one. And Liz and I have fought the same fucking lich 3 different times in the same campaign of D&D. So I was like, well, that's funny. So I read the lich one first because it's the first book in the series. And it's all the same office setting, just different people. So like the first one, she's the assistant to the big bad boss in the building, and he's the lich. And then in the second one, it's the HR. It's the HR lady and an orc who is in IT, and she accidentally mate bonds with him because apparently for orcs, it's at first blood.
I love an accidental mate bond. Oh. I fucking love books that are just like, oh shit, we're together now.
It's so funny. Because what actually happens is he's trying to help her open a cabinet, a filing cabinet drawer. And so he like gets down on his knees to like really like look at it and see how to get it. Yeah, he did. To really see how to like get it open. But she is impatient and can't let anybody do anything for her. So she like,
story of my life.
She like grabbed the drawer and like tried to like yank upwards and pull out. And when she did it, she elbowed him in the face and gave him a bloody nose.
That's what you need to do, Wiggs, to find a guy. Just start throwing elbows.
Just start breaking their noses. I've been going about this all wrong.
And she broke his glasses.
Oh.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Glasses are a pain in the ass to get.
Especially when you're like 7 foot tall because he's an orc.
Yeah, I suppose you can't sit in that chair proper, can you?
No, by the way, go and look at the covers. They're highly amusing.
I already have in the short amount of time.
All right. Well, Liz, you got
something entirely different than all of that.
Great.
I read A Study in Drowning by Ava Reed, which is, I guess, probably all over the TikToks. I don't know. I've seen a lot of reviews and a lot of people really like it. I thought it was pretty meh, gonna be honest with you.
Really? It has been all over the TikToks. Betrayed again.
Yeah. I can see how some people would really like it. Mm. But I gave it 3 stars. It is a book in its hardcover form, right? So the pages are bigger, print is bigger. It's 378 pages. This is actually a book that needed another 100 pages.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah. The main character, Effie, is... Her main personality trait is that she's suffering from severe kind of anxiety and nervousness, which makes sense. It's explained in the book why it's like that, and I get it. But I was just like, you need to give me more than that. And the... Preston, the male lead, to me is like super two-dimensional. I was like, who is this guy? I don't know.
Why do I care about him?
Yeah, it was honestly, why did I care about any of it? Was kind of the vibe, which is super unfortunate. It's probably a little bit lower because I had such high expectations going into it, which is unfortunate. But I just like, I couldn't be bothered. I was reading it and I was just like, I don't get the hype.
I felt that way when I read Life After Life. Like, it was so hyped up as being this like crazy mind-bending story, and it wasn't. It was fine, but it was just this woman who slips back in time every time she dies to a point where she could potentially change events. Yeah. That's it. Spoiler if you haven't read it, but like you figure that out very quickly. But like I think that there's a lot of these books where if they hit you at the right time,
yeah,
gonna be bangers, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're reading it just independent of that vibe check, they're just like, ugh.
And that's kind of what I got from a lot of people who read A Study in Drowning and loved it, is that they connected so heavily with Effie, the main character. And I think at a younger age, I probably would have.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
But not as much anymore. I will say, because I do think you'll like it more than me. So if really? You ever want to borrow it. Well, another massive plot point is prejudice against women in the academic setting specifically.
See.
Okay. Should have led with that. Sorry.
Well, so in theory, yes. Right. But like there's this the show on Netflix, The Chair. I don't know if you remember when that came out, but it was like everywhere for a minute because it was Sandra Oh starring in this series, which, and she does amazing. I only got through the first three episodes and I was like, I cannot fucking watch this anymore. It's too real. Yeah. I'm stressed. I don't want to watch shows and be stressed when I'm stressed in my normal life.
Well, that's why Pappy and I can't watch The Bear, which everybody loves. As he and I watched the first episode, and we were like, no, we're not putting our minds back into like working in a kitchen.
So let's talk about our author. Diana Quincy is an author for and has been for the last decade or so. Her first book was published in 2013. And she says that she didn't always know that she wanted to be an author, but she always loved reading and writing. She discovered her love of romantic books when she was picking up summer library books for her two boys and browsed through the historical romance while waiting in line to check out their books. And that's all it took to hook her. Yeah.
Hooker.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Stop it.
She spent that summer reading a bunch of historical romance, and a few months later, she was motivated enough to write her own story. Good on you, because I have no motivation. So, and now she cannot imagine not writing. She is an Arab American who grew up all over the world as the daughter of a United States Foreign Service officer. After college, she became a television journalist, but quickly decided it was much more fun to make up stories where a happy ending is always guaranteed. She has been on many best of lists, including Library Journal and Washington Post, and she's now happily settled in Virginia, but gets the itch to explore far off places from time to time. So yeah, that is who she is. Let me tell you about some of her other books real quick. She has several series, including The Clandestine Affairs, Rebellious Brides, Accidental Peers, Atlas, Catsby's Mysteries. And this, the book that we are reading today, The Duke Gets Desperate, is the first in her Sirens in Silk series. So yeah, that is our author. Tell me what this book is about, pretty please.
Okay, so this book is about a lovely young lady who has traveled to England to go see her cousin. And when she gets there, she realized that her cousin is dead. She never actually met her cousin. She just had exchanged letters with her and everything. And she finds out when she gets there that she's dead and she's gone to the funeral. Her cousin's stepson, is expecting to inherit the castle, because it was his family's castle and everything. He does not. As it turns out, her cousin left it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a very work-minded, money-making-minded person. Very awesome. She kind of cracks me up in a lot of ways on that one. And she's trying to decide how she can make money to save this castle, because it's kind of falling into disrepair at this point. And she owns the castle, but he owns all the land around the castle. So then they're fighting with each other constantly.
Like you do.
Like you do. Yeah. Like you would. I mean,
realistically, yeah.
Realistically. So she's trying to decide how to deal with everything. She's also got some trauma from the fact that she helped build up her family's business at home. And then when her father died, she was supposed to inherit part of it, essentially. She was supposed to have a money-making venture and everything, because that's what her father wanted. But he didn't actually write it in the will. And her brother just screwed her.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was being an asshole and he thinks he can do everything himself. Spoiler alert, he's wrong on that one. So let's discuss.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go for it.
One of the first things I want to talk about is I love when an author expands my vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And there were, like, surprisingly, there were quite a few words where I was like, oh, shit, I got to look this up. And I don't just mean, like, she's got words that, she's got language that's specifically Palestinian. Those weren't the words that I really needed to look up, because I just... That was a translation thing, right?
Right. Yeah.
But like one of the words was Levantine. And I was like, how have I never heard this word before in my life? And I had to look it up. And it really just means like the Middle Eastern region. Kind of, oh, like, sure. We would say like Prussia, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I was like, oh, I feel dumb. But I was like, I was really pleasantly surprised with her word choosing. And not in a, like, I was surprised that this author in particular, because I've never read her work, but surprised because often that's not what you expect to get out of a romance novel. You know, like, you're like, it's going to be the same descriptions that I'm used to. So that was really cool.
It is fun reading historical romances, especially ones that are set in like England and such, because you do just find a lot of terms that you're like, I don't know what that.
There were a couple of other ones, where I was like, I guess I'm gonna have to look this up. Oh shit.
I thought there was one that was specific to like having sex or getting pregnant, but I don't remember what it is now.
I think there was. There were a couple of ones. I think I only marked off the first one, but I was just like, oh, dang. This is exciting. I love new vocabulary.
Speaking of somebody who listened to the audiobook, the switching into Arabic, gorgeous.
Yeah.
Stunning. That's good. It was so fun to listen to. Her aunt cracks me the fuck up because like she had the accent and everything and she would switch in and out of Arabic and I'm like, this is really funny. The amount of times that woman called him a donkey. Or called somebody else a donkey.
Everyone's a donkey, essentially. She's like, if you could be less... I would appreciate it.
And this book also is a Victorian era book instead of a Regency. And I know for me, I don't read a lot of historical romances. So it was nice to just be like in a slightly different era. That was nice.
Yes. Yeah. And I like that they were giving you the sense of that era of this like sort of dying aristocracy thought process, that it wasn't just the same old with the Regency a little bit. Not to say that I don't love Regency romance or anything, but like there's only so many ways that you can do that, right? Like it's, you're not allowed to touch, and then now you get to touch, go at it.
Right. Well, and because they're also not in London, they're out by whatever town it is, by his castle. They're also not as controlled by the Ton. So it's okay that he, as a duke, is marrying an American merchant's daughter.
Yeah.
Okay-ish. Okay-ish. Definitely scandalous, but it's not like, you know, end of the world scandal.
Well, I was surprised at first. I was like, oh, so her being an Arab American merchant's daughter isn't that big a deal, and then it was, and I was like, there it is. There's the racism. Okay. And I was like, listen, if we're doing like this version of historical romance that's like
let's just not go there,
I'm all for that, but I was like, I feel like some of these characters are definitely racist, like hardcore racist.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So then when it showed up, I was like, and exactly from who I thought it would be, bitch.
Oh, yeah. No, I was the second I met that woman. We're speaking of Francis.
The Francis?
The housekeeper.
Oh, the housekeeper? Her too. Okay. Spoilers. If you're going to read this book, come back in 2 minutes, okay?
It's going to take more than 2 minutes. Don't lie to the people.
Come back after you read the book. Whatever. It's not my problem. You're listening.
We spoil shit.
Yeah, don't listen to our podcast if you don't want spoilers.
Who thought it was gonna be the fucking housekeeper?
I did.
Oh, the housekeeper. Like, I didn't think she was gonna be the ultimate villain, Mrs. Shaw, but I was prepared for her to be a bitch.
I was prepared for her to be a bitch. I wasn't prepared for her to be, like, giving a Bond speech at the end.
Oh, yeah. I was. The second she even, like, entered, I'm like... It's that bitch.
Really?
Yeah. For whatever reason, I just instant, like, hatred. And then that confrontation happened, and I was literally standing in the romance section in fucking Barnes & Noble going, yeah, you get her, bitch.
See, I was expecting more the housekeeper from the first season of Bridgerton when Daphne becomes the Duchess.
Yes.
Who's, like, super cold to her at first, but that is, like, okay, maybe you're not so bad towards the end.
Okay, but you're listening to people. You're getting their advice.
Right. You've come around.
That's what I thought, especially when she was like, don't worry, you can still make money off of this. I was like, oh, that's going to settle it. They're going to be fine-ish, right? Mm-mm. And instead, she was just like, I'm a fucking murderer, just so you know.
Yeah, this is all my fault. They did bring in, so Deanna Quincy, the author, brought in Francis, who is Strict, the Duke of Strickland, who we call Strict in the book, mm-hmm. His best friend's sister.
Mm-hmm. Who is in love with him.
Who's had it for him since the beginning. Since they were young.
She was a good red herring. Yeah, I did think it was her for a little bit.
And then at the end, she was just like, look, I get it. We're cool. And I'm right? like, okay, Francis, you cool.
Right? Like, here I'm thinking this is like what a murderous Caroline Bingley is. Right? And nope. She was just like, oh, I guess you can have him. I mean, you already have him. So, okay, bye.
She was a well-tempered lady of breeding, and she actually was. Like. No. She's like, oh, this sucks for me, but like, yeah, okay.
I'm not gonna like throw a fuss about it. It is what it is.
I'm not gonna do what you think I'm gonna do. I'm not gonna flip out.
I also didn't trust Alfred from the get-go.
Alfred Price.
Yes.
The painter.
I didn't. He gave me bad vibes immediately. Immediately, no. I was like, ma'am, this man is talking out his ass about your cousin. Nope. Don't trust that man.
Well, and he also immediately was like, hold up. I just met you, but I need to let you know that the Duke probably murdered your cousin.
Right? That was my instant. I'm like, oh. And then I felt, so as you find out that, you know, you thought that like her cousin, throughout the entire book, you think her cousin did these horrible things to our main man. That she stole his artifacts and sold them and everything. And as it turns out, she was just trying to live her life. Just trying to get along, and she didn't sell anything. In fact, she was trying to get it all back for him and find out what happened to it. And I'm like, I feel so bad then, because like he already didn't get along with her very well. She was his stepmother, which fine, you can have your opinion of your stepmother, just fine. But like, she never actually did anything to him.
Well, I think also the thing that they don't touch on much, but Strict, the Duke, didn't have a very good opinion of his own dad.
Yeah.
No, he was very much like, that guy, he just goes around fucking around, doesn't do his job, man's mm-hmm. running this place into the fucking ground, I'm glad he's dead. Like, that basically, was the vibe.
Basically.
Well, he said that she spent lavishly, which she seems to, she had like redecorated a couple of the rooms, only a couple of the rooms in the castle, very exquisitely and everything, which...
I don't know. She's sort of giving me this tragic story of like her whole world was in those few rooms she redecorated.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of sympathy for her. And I think Strict owes her some kind of penance. Don't know how you can do that for the dead, but.
Well, he just married her, technically her heir, and is giving Rhea pretty much anything she wants.
I mean, that's true.
So that's his penance.
Yeah.
Also, not only that, but then he gave her all the enterprises that she set up to make money for the
goddamn
estate. Yeah. That one had me like, I was like, oh, sir.
I mean, I gotta like say from the jump, I was like, okay, I see where we're going. We're doing a little enemies to lovers.
Right? Yeah.
Okay. And then he was actually kind of a good guy. Like, not just in like, oh, he's a good guy because he's our handsome, dashing hero, but like actually though, you're just gonna give up all of this shit and give her rights that no woman in this time has. Actually though, Strict.
Right? I was like, oh sir.
Yeah, he pretty quickly just kind of went from this bitch is in my home to, well, this bitch is in my home and we gotta make the best of it.
Like, he jumped straight from bitches be bitches to, like, second wave feminism. Like, yeah. I was like, bro.
It's because, like, at first he's completely against all her ideas. He thinks it's really stupid that she's gonna charge people to take tours of the castle and everything. And then he starts to kind of realize the merit of the situation and that, like, oh, this actually might do things.
So, Rhea is trying really hard to take care of this castle, and she is coming up with all these really enterprising ways to go about it. Like, she sees Mrs. Shaw, the housekeeper, like give free tours to just visitors. She's like, we can make money off that. And then there's these goats, and she's like, listen, you can actually use goat fur to make all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And so this woman is trying to save the castle. And even if Strict doesn't like her, he has to appreciate somebody that's like coming in and being like, I'm trying to save your family's ancestral home, dude.
But I also get why he throws a temper tantrum at first.
Oh, for sure.
Like, oh, yeah. Like,
can you imagine, like, just in your own basic bitch home that, like, I rent this bitch, right? If like, somebody came in and was like, hey, so I am subletting your apartment, even though you didn't get any permission ever for that. And because of that, you got to change all the furniture in here. You would light that person on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? That's actually one thing I really like about this, because, like, is he angry at the beginning of it? Absolutely. Does he have a valid reason to be? Mm-hmm. 100%. Because this is his ancestral home. As we end up finding out, it was ended up kind of being a moot point. But we don't find that out for a very long time. And so I understand the prickly pear-ness of the situation.
Right. Well, and it's not just it's supposed to be his. He's supposed to be maintaining his family home, all that. A lot of the changes that she is doing go against tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people aren't very good at letting go of that.
Especially the English nobles.
Yeah, they got some things mm-hmm. to unpack.
I do really like, there's this one moment. So his dad apparently tried to learn to paint, and he painted a mural in this ancestral castle on the wall.
Which apparently was so bad that if they had the word fugly at that time, that would have been the yes. word used.
It was hideous. Apparently there was floating heads and everything. And there is just a really delightful moment when she like is trying to figure out how to tactfully be like, sir, can we please paint over this? Because it's his dad's and she doesn't know his relationship with his dad or anything.
Right.
And so she's like, so about your father's painting, and he's just like, please paint over that.
Right. So ugly.
it's so ugly.
So ugly. And I have to look at it all the time.
It's so ugly. Okay, so we can get somebody to paint a mural of it. Oh yeah, my dad's art teacher. And he's like, she's like, sir. He taught him to do that. And he's like, No. See, no. I promise you, it'll be fine.
His whole approach to it is, here's the thing, my dad's a bad student.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a really sweet moment where she is doing all these changes, but she's also trying to be as tactful mm-hmm. with the fact that this is his ancestral home. Mm-hmm. This is where he grew up. Like, she's not trying to be a bitch about everything, but she's like, things need to be done.
Well, from her perspective too, right, so from Strict's perspective, it's a shitty situation. From her perspective, it's not that it's a shitty situation, but it is a fucking weird one.
Yeah.
She has nothing to go home to and no money.
Well, but she's from New York or mm-hmm. somewhere in around New York. Right. And she just came to visit her cousin.
Who's dead.
Yeah, who she finds out is dead. And oh, by the way, she left you a castle. But unfortunately, the castle is a money pit. So.
Right.
Is a money pit and has no land to make money for it.
Because the land belongs to the other guy.
And the other guy hates you.
But also he still lives in the castle. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's that.
Yes. Even though he has a cottage as well.
It's a cottage. It's a three-story.
I know. I love that she totally calls that out too. She's like, oh, far be it for me to think that, you know, a cottage is a three-story house.
She definitely hits him with the poor little rich boy.
Yeah, she does.
Quite a bit, where she's like, oh.
The amount of times they call her a factory worker, I wanted to punch somebody. They're like, oh yeah, it's some American factory worker. I'm like, okay, her family owns the factory. Not that there's anything wrong with being somebody who works in a factory. There absolutely isn't, but I really wanted to punch him.
I do think that that's a pretty accurate statement from that time period.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the British aristocracy definitely looked down on new money and certainly industrious new money.
Definitely Americans.
Yeah. Yep. Fuck those Americans.
I have to say, though, it brings me a singular joy anytime I read it in a book or watch any media where there is an American who just like bull in a china shop's like English nobility, I'm like, yes.
It is very satisfying. It doesn't really matter what the circumstances are at all. Like, it could literally, Do you remember the movie What a Girl Wants? Mm-hmm. It's Amanda Bynes and her dad's Colin Firth. And like she like hugs her grandma, and her grandma's like, "Excuse the fuck out of me." And I'm like, "That's the kind of shit I live for." Just ruin their lives.
So one of my favorite things in the book is how often Raya is just fucking going like, "What the fuck is this?" Whenever they would explain to her, "No, this is the Duke of Strickland." Yes. You call him Your Grace. And she's like, "Why? What the fuck is this?"
I also like when she just calls him Grace.
She was trying. She's like, "Okay, Grace." And he's like, Nope.
Doesn't she also call him like Duke or the Duke all the time? And he's like, "You can't."
He's like, "That's not how." Okay. You know what? It's better than Grace. Yeah. Also, I gotta say, like, his name being Strickland, shortened to Strick, was basically just gave me permission to call him Strict the whole way in my head.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure I've accidentally said that on this podcast. Yes. Strict. Strick.
And then, Strick. Like, you find out his first name is Anthony, and I think they only use it, like, 3 times.
Oh, yeah. But they use it in the best way.
They do.
Arr.
Whenever he asks Raya to call him Anthony.
Oh,
I'm like, "Oh boy, yes please."
Oh boy.
The second he said it, I'm like, "Oh, his name is Anthony, is it?
Is it though?"
To be fair, they do say it in the very beginning of the book.
Yeah, no, I know. But
Anthony Carey, Duke of Strickland.
See, I didn't have that issue, but I also didn't physically read the words. I listened to the audiobook, so all I heard was Strick.
Yeah, that makes a difference.
Sure does.
I want to talk about the moment I realized that this book was gonna do things for me. Okay, right? So first of all, we've already got enemies to lovers, historical romance. Okay. We're going in good directions. But then you find out that there's a fated mates aspect to it as well. And I was like, "What the fuck?
Oh, yeah.
I can't handle this."
On top of there being technically a marriage of convenience kind of situation.
Except that they don't quite get married ever.
Yeah, not
so
until
an engagement of convenience.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was so much.
I will say, so I got the impression, and I could be totally off base here. Dina, her cousin. Mm-hmm. I feel like she did what she did, knowing that she didn't actually legally have the opportunity to give it to her and they would figure it out. I think she wanted them to get together.
Oh, yeah. I definitely got that vibe throughout the entire thing that Dina was just like, "I am manipulating everyone."
Yep. I definitely got the feeling that if she was alive, that was the game she was playing.
Yeah.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Like, she was like, "I'm going to invite my unmarried cousin and I'm going to get this pain in the ass that I have to call a stepson to get off my fucking ass with happiness."
I think she was like, "These two will be wonderful together." And yeah. I think she was totally gonna like shove them in places if she didn't get horrifically murked.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That kind of does happen, right? Like, unintentionally, our villains of the story are like setting up these romantic interludes. Yes. for our protagonists, and you're just like, "Okay, well, that did not have the desired outcome."
No. Well, the big one is when they go into the Undercroft.
Mm-hmm.
And Strick finds Raya down there just like exploring, because at this point it's her castle. She's like, "I'm just checking out my shit."
Well, and she's thinking about it, putting a gift shop down there, so she's trying to see how bad it would be because she's a little nerviosa about the underground thing.
Well, it was originally described to her as like a dungeon, but not
right.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. So like,
it's like the closest thing we have to a dungeon. She's like, "You guys actually have those?"
And the answer was no-ish.
No, we have a space that we can lock that's underground. How does that sound?
Yeah. So Strick finds her down there and they're bickering, bantering, whatever. And then they do a hot, sexy kiss, but they're interrupted.
Oh, more than a sexy kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Kiss.
No, the boobies were out.
The boobies were out.
There was hands.
Attention.
There was hands places that they shouldn't be in that time period.
Right? There was like, well, and he has this moment of like, "Oh shit, shouldn't be doing this." And Raya's just like, "Come back.
Come here.
Get your bitch ass back here."
She's like, "I don't care. We're not stopping.
I don't care. We're in this. And he's like, no.
No.
Ma'am. That was like the one moment where I was like, this is so cringy. Stop asking. Like, stop. And so I totally get why she gets upset, because she's like, that was embarrassing.
Yeah. And so then they banter, bicker, whatever, go their separate ways. And she gets locked in the pantry by who we eventually find out is Mrs. Shaw, I think.
Yes.
Which is just like, I love her thought process in there. She's like, why would somebody lock me in the pantry? I have all of the food and like drink I could need. I can't die here.
Right. She's like, well, Strick knew I was down here. Eventually, when I don't show up for dinner, or, you know, when I don't show up for bedtime, because she was staying in the same room with her aunt. Mm-hmm. She's like, when I don't show up, eventually somebody's going to be like, hey, Strick, have you seen her? He's going to come find me.
Which is precisely what happens.
Yeah.
Because her aunt, who's probably the best character in the whole goddamn book.
Oh, God, I love hilarious. Her so much. Her name is Majida.
Barges into his apartments being like, where is she?
She's like, you better fucking figure it out, my guy.
Right?
And then calls him a donkey like at least three times or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And so he finds her in the pantry because, yeah, he was with her.
Drunk as shit.
But she's drunk as shit.
Because she thought it was just apple cider. And it was. It was.
It is apple cider. But it is to apple cider to them as apple pie is to us. And if you're not from the Midwest, that's moonshine, bitch.
Well, moonshine with like...
with some flavor.
Yeah.
It still hurts going down.
Yeah. So she's drunk as a skunk. And I was like, this is amazing. This is... It was also written so well. Like,
yeah.
Drunk scenes to me are like one of the best ways to judge acting, writing, whatever, because a lot of people do it wrong.
So bad.
And I liked this one a lot, especially when Strict was just trying to like direct her and be like, no, we gotta get you food, we gotta get you water, we gotta get you to bed. And he turns around and immediately she just wanders off.
Yes. That is so accurate. Right.
Hearing that scene, I was just, all I could picture was me trying to get one of you bitches or Pappy to a certain location, and I turn around for a second, and you are surprisingly fast when you're drunk, and you're just gone.
Drunk people can definitely disappear on you.
Drunk people are honestly the best rogues. Right. They really just are, because you're like, okay, I know that you were here, you motherfucker. So she like completely avoids all of the good things, like food, water, her own fucking bed, and wanders off into his rooms.
Because she wanted to see his artifacts.
His treasure.
His treasure.
Yeah, I bet she did want to see his artifacts.
No. Because he's an amateur, like, archaeologist.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. So he's, like, semi-Indiana Jonesy.
I like to picture him as Indiana Jones, but a little bit nerdier.
Yeah.
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 And that's obviously how we... paler.
I want to
obviously
see
paler.
It was, and I could totally hear the, I want to see your artifacts, and then run away. That, yep, that's 100% this bitch when she's drunk. I am like, oh, I want to do this, and I run away and do it.
I once chased a drunk person down the street because he thought he saw a duck. So it don't take much.
Nope.
By the way, there was no duck. Just to clear that up.
Yeah. And so that's how they're caught in a compromising position, because she also does what drunk people do then, is goes, oh, bed, night.
Yes. Like, starfishes that motherfucker. And that's about when her aunt shows up and is like, what is she? I love that, like, the aunt is so conniving that she's like, of course I will go check on her, and then it's like barges into the room when he's like convinced she's already gone, and it's like, yeah man, don't fuck with us, we're gonna kick your ass.
Oh no. Yeah. Oh,
God, she cracks me up so much. There's so many times that her aunt just is my favorite. She aunt's constant donkey calling. She'll switch into it because she can speak English. It's broken English, as you would expect, you know, but she can speak English, and she will just simply shift into Arabic solely to insult the person that she's talking to.
Yeah, like Raya's must be having, in some ways, the best time because she's getting all the fucking tea that no one else gets to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like, I think that cook's a bitch. Okay, thank you, aunt. I'm standing in front of her and I have to keep a straight face. So if you could lock it up.
That would be my hardest time, is like the amount of times that she called Shaw a donkey to her face and Raya was standing right there. I wouldn't have been able to hold it together.
No. It's one of many reasons that I should probably not learn a secret language with another person, because already eye contact's enough.
It is one of my deepest regrets that I do not know a secret language. And it doesn't have to be secret. I could literally just be like French with like one other person, just so I could just whisper things. I think the other thing that I liked about the, I guess, the marriage of convenience trope is it decided it wasn't going to follow the full trope, mm-hmm. because it came in not halfway through the book, but it was like a good third or something, I think. And then they just never like actually got married until the end. There was like, it was a constant will they, won't they. I know they will because it's a romance book, but what's happening?
I did have a moment where I was like, at the end, is she really gonna fucking leave?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I did too. I was standing in Barnes & Noble going, you no.
I was like, this is not what I'm here for. I did not sign up for a drama. Don't do this to me.
I was also internally going, do not go back to your brother to help him. He's right? An asshole.
Yeah.
But I get it. Like, it's your family business. I would, and wouldn't, right?
And a lot more than just her brother depend on, right. on the income from that business.
Well, I also like that she added in a very specific detail that also is echoed in how she handles things at the castle, which is that she found local women in her community to help create some of their linens, who had the skill set but didn't have a job, and gave them a way to get income independently, whether they didn't have a husband because they passed or their husband wasn't earning enough to provide, like, mm-hmm. whatever it was, these women needed a job. Mm-hmm. And she made it happen. So all of these people that she's sought out and worked to create a life for, she no longer has any control over their fates. And that's got to be hard.
Absolutely. And she also does the same thing at castle, because like for the goats, because they're her, it's his father's goats. He hates the goats. But there's one sad little like spinner woman that he's kept on staff simply for the fact that he didn't want her to, you know, go hungry and everything. So she's just been in this room by herself doing kind of fuck all. And so she's like, you know what? Bet I can do this. And she has women in the village and everything come to help spin this yarn so that they can make the basically gifts to buy in the gift shop of like scarves, small rugs and everything. And so she did it again there, where she brought in the local talent, which also endears her more to the village itself.
Well, I think that's an important moment, one for her, mm-hmm. obviously. But also, it's the first moment we get of Strick where we see that he is actually a big old soft boy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because you're like, at first, you're kind of expecting like a hard shell asshole kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And instead, it doesn't take anything to make him putty. Like, he's so soft. And I love it. Mm-hmm. He's like, goes so quickly into Golden Retriever energy that it's not even funny.
Oh, yeah. As soon as the scandal happens, mm-hmm. and all of his friends are like, well, you could just marry her, because then you would get the castle, mm-hmm. or at least your guys's son or heir or whatever would get the castle. And then the scandal is over. Everything's fine. He's just kind of like, okay, cool. I could do that. And then they talk about it. And then he's like, well, I guess I just got to go along with whatever this woman says. And he seems really happy about that idea.
Right? He really does. And I love when he defends her.
Oh, yeah.
He's just like, I'm sorry, do you presume to speak for me?
Can we talk about how one of my favorite moments early on is when she finds Strict working at the smithy, no shirt.
Oh, yeah.
No shirt.
She just like wanders in and he's bare chested, wielding a hammer.
Well, to be fair, she's just wandering the lands trying to figure out what, you know, what's around here, and walks right by the forge. And there he is in all of his glory. And I can see it in my brain.
I can too. He's glistening and sweaty.
Yeah.
You got to have just muscles a little to sooty. Swing that hammer
just
too.
Just a little sooty.
Yeah.
And, but all I could think was, I was like, is that really normal? That can't be right.
I was also a little confused, like, why is a duke doing this? But he kind of just seems to have a lot of hobbies. He, like, just does things that he wants to do and says, fuck it.
Well, I mean, I was mostly fine with that. What I'm talking about is my man with a naked chest in front of fire. Like, that can't be safe. But then they say that the other guy who's working there also isn't wearing a shirt. And I was like, is that normal practice?
My thing about that could be, and I could be talking about it out of my ass, I know nothing. However, so clothing material and everything was much more expensive back then, and his clothes especially would be much more expensive. So maybe they didn't want to burn holes through them.
You want to burn holes through your skin?
People cared less? I don't know.
I guess it also depends. They don't really describe the activity he's doing in the forge, right? So he could be actually hitting metal, right? Like heating it up in the fire, hitting it. But he could be doing much more minute things, like shaping it. Maybe. So if he's making That's jewelry true. Or something, he wouldn't be making a lot of sparks.
I don't know. It made me nervous. OSHA was like, no, we can't be doing this.
I had no thought for OSHA. All I thought was, he must have a back.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
the shoulders on that man.
God damn. Why are rippling. Shoulders so good?
I don't know. I was just thinking of like the rippling shoulder blades as a hammer fell. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
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 Mm-hmm. Why did I get the vibe though from Strick that, especially like once they get married, that he's just gonna be like, I'm a kept man now.
Yeah.
I just do my hobbies and she does everything else.
He's a dad bought it.
100% is. And he's fully happily resigned to that. He's like, yeah, you don't need my advice. You do better than me. So, all right. Well, so at one point when they're fighting, because she's found this other conjugal, whatever the fuck they call the second will.
Oh, it's, I don't remember what it's called. I don't know how to pronounce what it's called. It's like an addendum or something.
Yeah. Where it's, the castle is supposed to pass from the stepmother to his son after she's passed, right? And Raya's found this and is fighting with him. And her way of doing this is by suggesting like the most obscene things that they could possibly have. Like there's a racetrack around the house that she wants to create and there's going to be bear fighting.
Yeah, a bear fighting pen. And she was talking about like allowing traveling circuses and
an
like
oddity show.
Oddity shows.
And he's like, I am not cool with this, but I cannot let her know why. I can say no. But also, she's kind of smart. So maybe this is a good idea, and I'm just not seeing it.
Well, the setup for all of this is they had agreed to be married, and they had gone from kind of hate fucking, mm-hmm. or at least hate making out, to actually maybe potentially liking each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so he finds, or he learns of this like addendum to the will where he's supposed to be getting the castle. And his thought process, which is the dumbest thing in the world, is just, I can't tell her because the situation is so tenuous. If she finds out that she doesn't actually own the castle, will she go back to America?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, you fucking idiot.
I was like, so dumb.
That was the part that like where the miscommunication ish trope started to really like cycle a lot.
Yeah. I was getting very frustrated. I'm like, just talk to each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because then she finds out and instead of just confronting him, does all the weird like, I'm going to have an oddity shop to get him to break. And then he is like, well, she'll realize this is a bad idea eventually.
Yeah. So I'm just going to let smart her, woman.
I'm just going to let her figure it out. That she should not be like creating a racetrack and shit. And I'm just like, would you two just fucking talk to each other?
I mean, the miscommunication trope is tired and it is like, it is what it is. But I think it's in some ways sort of valid in this story because they have spent quite a bit of time fighting each other. And so falling back on that as a habit, makes total sense. Like, once he has already initiated the, oops, I'm not going to tell you this big secret. Like, after that, it makes sense that that's the route that they would take. Of just like, I'm not going to let you know that I am fuming right now.
Well, she also has a big secret, too, which is that her brother sent a letter and basically said, will you come back and help me run the company? Like, I fucked up. I fucked up real hard. Come home, please.
I thought when that reveal came out that it was going to be him getting angry at her for keeping the secret, and said he was just sad. And I was like, oh, oh, oh no. He's like, but don't go.
But I loves you.
We'll get to that. Yeah. Also, another moment early on that I really liked is when she gets pissed off because the cleaning staff isn't doing what she told them to do.
Oh, fucking loved it. And she's like, fuck it, I'll do it myself.
Yes. And I, like, I'm always about somebody who's like, I'm not going to tell you to do something that I'm not willing to do myself. Mm-hmm. Right? And so she, like, gets up there, is cleaning these windows and shit, and he walks in and he's like, the fuck? That ain't where you're supposed to be.
You're gonna break your neck. And I internally went, but you have maids that doing this. Why are you afraid? Right. She's gonna break her neck, but you have maids doing this.
I do think that the clothing makes a difference.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Does she wear much more practical clothing than a normal lady would?
Yes.
Most of the time, absolutely. Yeah. But
I love how her work outfit was described as this like darker brown colored skirt with just like a white top and a leather belt.
That top.
Well, yeah. I could just picture it, and I was like, oh, she looks so gorgeous, this woman.
I could picture it too.
She's hot.
Oh yeah.
That's absolutely, that's undeniable. As somebody who's had to research Victorian clothing, I can pretty well like imagine exactly what she was wearing. And there's this kit that they had for women who went like hiking and stuff, and that's it. Like that's the long dark skirt, the white top, the belt, and then they would have like a jacket that went over the top, and they had like these walking sticks, and they're very cute. They're adorable. You're like, wow. Anyway, she was hot. Is the moral of the story. Yeah. But yeah, and so then that makes her fall, and he catches her, of course. And is all like pressed up against her and is immediate like boing.
Yeah.
It's boner alert time.
And that's before they first ever kiss, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That first kiss came out of nowhere for me.
Right?
It did for me too. I was
how
like,
did we get here? And not like how did we get here because I know you both are hot for each other, but just in this moment, we went from her like just looking around the cottage, looking at all the artifacts he got, to him being like, and I'm kissing you now. It is happening now.
But he is surprised at this choice he's made. He's like, yeah. I don't know how my lips are currently pressed to hers. I don't know how this happened. I'm not complaining, but this is a bad choice.
It's not good. Yeah, they definitely do that a lot. Like, come together and then be like, whoa, this is bad. Mm-hmm. Bad choices. No
this
more.
This is going to get us in trouble.
They then, are like, the definition of jump each other's bones. Oh. And then they think of it like, oh, shit, we're not supposed to do that. And I'm like, but do it more.
Well, then they get engaged and then they're like, all bets are off. We're Let's like, go to town. It.
We're going to Pound Town.
What did you guys think of the dirty talk, though? Because like that was a specific thing in the book, is him talking about how some ladies he's been with do like the dirty talk.
I mean, it wasn't very severe, and so I thought it was nice. Honestly, it wasn't
polite,
that degrading
dirty talk.
Yeah,
it felt a little. I don't know. It felt a little out of place, but I'm sure it wasn't.
I think
it's the way it's said for me, I think.
Yeah. I think anything, any kind of dirty talk coming from a British accent, like a posh British accent, is going to be a little weird. Right?
Yeah.
It needs a little swagger behind it, and this man ain't got it. Swagger's not his game.
And then she dirty talked at the end, and I was like, oh, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, then there was the really good scene in the, whatever these fucking rooms are. They're rooms.
What was happening in it, Liz? Do you describe?
it was right after Francis left, right? And they get into a fight, and then he's like, listen, no fighting, only sex.
Oh, yeah. That was a good scene.
It just, like, bends her over the couch.
Oh, my gosh. That was pretty funny, too, because she was literally like, why are you hugging Francis, that bitch? And he's like, don't worry about it. And she's like, no, why? And he's like, no, for real. Just, like, bend over there.
No, for real. Grab the couch.
I was like, oh, God, hold on. It was nice.
It was nice. It was a good scene.
Yeah, our poor little soft boy apparently has a little bit of a rougher side.
Which we love to see.
We do love.
We like a dumb multi-dimensional man.
True. Yeah. I like to see all the facets of options available.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I also love that, like, the thought process going through her head is, I'm still really mad about this, but also... Let's go.
I'm still really mad about this, but oh, that feels good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My goodness.
We're blushing more in this episode than we have in many, and it's we've talked about some very dirty things in this.
I think it's because we haven't talked about dirty things in a long time.
It's true.
It's true. We've had some very tame reads and watches recently.
The one thing that so we've talked a lot about things kind of like maybe like one of the things that I didn't like is I couldn't always tell whose perspective it was sometimes.
Yeah.
That was something that was driving me nuts. The only indication that she has in the book for when you're maybe switching, and it's not always switching, it's sometimes just a passage of time.
Yeah.
Is the first like sentence will be all caps. And that's it. That's the only indication you have that there's been a change.
I have it from a different perspective, but I also listened to the audiobook. I will say that, you know, if in thinking about it, it probably would have really fucking confused me reading the book, but it was a multi-person audiobook, and so it was a male voice, and then it was a female voice.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because she splits it up in the chapter, which is not very common.
One chapter was this person's perspective, or one chapter was this person's perspective. It switched in the middle.
And in some ways, it was nice because you could get the same scene from both perspectives.
Right.
But on the other hand, it was really frustrating because just like you said, it was really hard to follow. And you would have to sometimes get a couple paragraphs in before any names were used so you could figure out what the fuck was going on.
There was definitely times where I would read it and then stop and go, wait a minute. Whose perspective is this? And have to like go back and almost reread it to be like, oh, this is all from Strick's perspective, not Raya's, who we literally were just in two paragraphs ago.
Yeah. Well, and while we're on the topic of writing issues that we had, I liked both proposals. I just think she should have chosen one because it was a rehashing of the same information. So you read one chapter and he's like proposed and she's like, nay, we're not doing that. And then chapter immediately following, he makes all the same points, and then she's like, maybe.
Do you don't mean the very first time where he just like says in the drawing room or whatever, like, listen, we're in a tough situation, let's get married?
Yeah, that happens twice.
Well, it happens at the end too when they're actually in love.
But no, I mean back to back. Like, okay, so let me see if I can find it. Chapter 14, he says,
it's like the least romantic proposal.
Yeah, it's a terrible proposal. And then immediately in chapter 15, she says no. And he says, why the devil not?
Yeah.
And then continues to propose to her on the same terms. Like, it's just the same. So it's not like the proposal is like two separate proposals. It's just two chapters about the same proposal. And it could have just been one. Like, it was... I just didn't need two chapters of the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Cycling back over and over again.
Fair enough.
I was like, those are not, that's just the same thing.
It is just the same thing. That's
but
my
I mean,
point.
Like, it's not two proposals.
It's two chapters of proposal.
Sure, sure.
And it did not need to exist. It could have, you could have just, like, gotten her to the point where she finally says maybe, rather than him jumping back to our son would own it. Like, you already made that point, my guy. Right? And several other points like that. So,
whenever in these books when they're like, but our son will own this, I'm like, why are we talking about hypothetical children already?
Well, back then they would be.
Yeah.
He also have a good answer when she was like, what if they're all girls? And he's like, then I hope they're as beautiful as you. It's like, good answer, boy.
Well, I was going to say, the second he said it, I'm like, oh, that was smooth.
And then doesn't he immediately follow it up with, but I hope they don't have your temper or something like that?
Yeah. Proposes. He's just like, bets are off. Now I can do whatever the fuck I want. Oh, yeah. And I'm going for it, ma'am. And I got to say, this is one of my, not necessarily pet peeves, but one of the things I laugh about the most in romance novels. It's always like, oh, the next time you're going to be begging for it before I touch you again or I kiss you again or whatever. And
then they don't give it to us.
He makes that threat, but like, mm-hmm. he caves so easy.
He's the one that does not have any sort of like control.
He has no resistance whatsoever. Yeah. He's like, you're standing there. Obviously, we should be doing something else.
We should for sure be fucking.
We're getting married. I'll be able to do anything I want with the castle. We're doing everything she wants with the castle.
Yes.
Yeah, well.
Is his MO, is I will get my way. My way is her way now.
I have a big old soft boy who lives to serve her.
Yes.
Just while we're talking about things that kind of bugged us, I feel like the ending was so super rushed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, I'm glad that Strick gave her the Castle Treme, or however you pronounce it, Enterprises. So not the castle, but the Enterprises that runs all of the businesses in the castle. But I was super bummed that she like almost gets murdered and then just goes, you know, maybe I do want to stay here. Like, that's I mean, I get that you had a
revelation at the top of the tower.
Yeah, like a near death experience, or not, or kind of maybe.
To be fair to this book and this author, that is sort of my biggest problem with historical romance, because that's how it goes. Like, that's the formula, is that it's tension until you're starting to get what you want. And then even when you get what you want, there's tension. And then at the end, happy ending.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that you could mix it up, you know, try something else.
I think a lot of it could have been solved if we spent a little bit more time in their internal thoughts. Because I feel like, I mean, this book is super fast paced. There's mm-hmm. a lot of dialogue, which makes it just a quick like weekend read.
Yeah.
But I kind of wish sometimes that we spent a little bit more time like with the characters kind of mulling over their choices. Mm-hmm. Because some of their choices just came out of nowhere, or mm-hmm. were just like, OK, cool.
Yes. You mm-hmm. for all the point of view switching, very little of either's point of view was about their own thoughts outside of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a very fast-paced book, which does make it a very fast read. The audiobook is only 8 hours long.
The other thing, sort of on those same lines, that I like about their relationship is that he's constantly expecting her to, oh, she should submit to me and all this kind of shit. And when she finally does, he's like, nope. We can't do this. We can't do this. And she's like, what if I want to submit this time? And I'm like, ma'am.
Ma'am, this is a Walmart.
There's this part where he's like trying to tell her how it's gonna be, right? And she's like, I am a person who is accustomed to going at it alone in my life. And he's like, how can that be? You have a large family, yada yada yada, right? So then he's like, I'm used to giving orders. and she goes, and in our marriage bed, I shall be delighted to follow them. And he's like, stop treating this like a joke.
Doesn't he also do the same thing to her, though, at one point when she's like trying to be all bossy to him? And he's like, yes, do you want me on my knees?
He does. Yes. He talks about eating her out a lot.
Yeah.
And yeah, he does.
Thankfully, they do deliver.
They do deliver on that. I was like, oh, hello.
I do have a slight gripey poo about that, though. You know, I'm not a big fan when phrases get used over and over and over again. And every time his hands were going anywhere near the lady biz, it was always phrased this way. He raised her skirts and his fingers sought the slit in her undergarments. And I'm like, listen, I'm not saying that's a wrong way to say it. I'm just saying you can say that about 5 million other ways. So we don't have to read that same phrase over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Also, weirdly enough, I'm not a big fan of the word slit.
Well, this one is appropriately used because yes. in her yes. undergarments.
Yes, yes.
Not a woman's slit.
She was describing the way their undergarments work, right? But I was just like, okay, well, here's an example. You could say his fingers ruched her skirt as they drew up her leg to her waiting warmth. I don't really love that either, but you know what? It's different.
That phrase made me feel ooky.
Yeah. I've read that before.
Yeah.
That was not my imagination.
Thank God.
I will say, though, my imagination had a lot of problems with her skirts. Because a lot of times they did it without her skirts being taken off. And I'm like, I know she's got big skirts.
They're just shoving them up.
So that means at some points he just has a bunch of skirts and her ass. That's all he can see.
They were constantly doing all of this in a semi-dressed situation. Yeah. And it was like...
Well, they were trying not to get caught for the most part.
Mm.
And so to fully unclothe her, do you know how long that takes to put on?
Well, they do finally get her undressed finally once, but then he's dressed fully. So like...
They have a scene in his bed.
That's true. That's true.
I think it's actually the first scene, when like their first full sex scene.
First full get down to business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's also when they mention that she's a virgin, which would make sense at 25?
26.
26.
Also, age appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loved that. Loved that.
The age appropriate.
Because he's in his 30s?
Something like that. Yeah. And also, he shouldn't be surprised, right? Like, that's the expectation of the time still, is that she should be a virgin. But the bigger issue is, and he seems to be the only one who gives a shit about this, is that everything that they're doing, including having sex before they're officially married, is like very, very bad. It doesn't matter that you're engaged. Like it's
like super illegal.
Like you, they're looking gonna look the other way because you're engaged. But what if you break off the engagement? Right now ruined, and she ruined. Seems to just think I don't give a shit. And I'm like, that's not that.
Well, and you're also rolling the dice on pregnancy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
I know back then they like relied on the pullout method.
Yeah.
But that doesn't work.
We learned long ago the pullout method is not effective.
Well, and they make a big deal when he does finally finish in her at the end. Yeah. And it's like, she could already be pregnant for all you
fucking right. Oh, yeah.
She could have gone all the way back to New York and been like, oops.
That would have been an interesting twist to the book for her to be like, no, I'm going back to New York. And then find out she's pregnant and have to like write him a letter and then they have to come back together.
Mm-hmm.
God.
Actually, wouldn't mind that ending. I don't really like the surprise pregnancy trope, right?
I don't either.
But I wouldn't mind the ending where they're like, nope, we're going to do what's right for my family. I'm going to go back to them. And he's like, I'm going to make this noble sacrifice and let you.
And still give you the enterprise or whatever.
Yep. And then she goes all the way back. Realizes, oopsie doodle, and writes him and goes, so here's the story, right? And then I don't know how you resolve that exactly off the cuff, but maybe it's something where he allows her to reside half in the United States, half in wherever the fuck their castle is, and like she travels back and forth every 6 months, like Hades and Persephone.
That'd be really hard though, traveling.
Because
it takes
months just to travel.
Yeah,
that's true.
It takes months to get there. The reason I was like, oh my god, gross, when I liked the thought of her finding out she's pregnant when she's back in New York and having the baby and then coming back, but I was thinking of the months on the ship with a newborn.
Or she either has to do it right away and it's months on a ship while being pregnant.
Yeah, that was my oh God, gross, because I was thinking in reality brain, not romance novel brain. Right. And
I thought for sure that she was going to go back to New York anyway and he was going to follow her. Like, that was my expectation of the ending.
I didn't think either of them were going to leave that castle.
I do like that they say that they spend their like marriage or essentially their honeymoon. In New York,
mm-hmm. getting things squared around. I did like that they didn't leave that like loose end to be pulled.
Yeah.
Like, she's still helping out. She's taking care of the business, the shit, and then basically says fuck you to her brother, which he deserves. I hate her brother for many reasons, even though he's really non-existent in the book for the most part. Like, you find out that he fucked her over, and then it's repeated throughout the book and everything that she doesn't trust anyone because her brother fucked her over. But I'm like, you really don't ever actually get to like meet him or anything. There's one letter from him.
Yeah. But he's definitely like written in a negative light in the yes. book. Fairly so. I think the only reason I wouldn't like the pregnancy trope or the pregnancy thing at the end is I like the fact that they decided to be together because they wanted to be together and there wasn't like a forced reason.
Yeah. Just a point of a clarification, just because this is going to bother me if I don't. Just to kind of contextualize, because I know it sounds fucking insane. Queen Victoria's reign is not that far away from the Titanic. So, like, ships were moving a lot faster than still we imagine. It's weeks, not months.
Yeah. Sure, sure. But it's still weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Just, it was going to drive me nuts. I'm so sorry.
There's blocks of time that to me just exist as like one time, even though it'll be like 200 years and so many different things.
Yes.
So, because like,
it would still be very expensive to go back and forth every like 6 months.
Yes. Yeah.
How crazy would it be to be Raya's mom? And just to send your sister or your sister-in-law and your daughter to England when you didn't even want them to go to begin with. And then you get a letter back that's like, I'm staying here because I own a castle. And then another letter is like, I married a duke.
Can you imagine? And then she shows up with said duke and you just look at your sister and go, you fucked this up.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
You had one job.
God damn it.
Should we talk about the murder attempt and the actual murder? Because we touched on it, but we didn't actually, like, really talk about it.
Yeah. So the whole deal is Mrs. Shaw is trying to, like, screw over everyone and sell these, like, priceless artifacts with Alfred Price. And then Dina, the cousin, found out.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Shaw pushed her off of a tower in an abbey, in an ancient abbey ruins, whatever, and then tries to do the same fucking thing to Raya.
So here's the problem I had with that, and I really should say I've got two problems. Number one, she really didn't have to pull this shit with
Dina.
I'm sorry, I think I've been saying Deanna or Dina.
It looks like it's spelled like Deanna.
Yeah,
anyway, not the problem. Anyway, so the two problems I have with this are Dina didn't have to go there and Mrs. Shaw didn't have to kill her. Like, she was on to their scheme, but they could have just stopped the scheme. Like, what? Like, she hadn't even considered implicating Mrs. Shaw in it. She was only looking at Price for the whole thing.
Yeah, she was just trying to figure out how to get the things back for Anthony.
All she had to do to get away with it scot-free is throw him under the bus. Mm-hmm. He already was not well-liked for his gambling debts and all this kind of stuff. It's a bad crime. It's a dumb crime.
Mm-hmm.
First one. And then the second one's idiotic.
I'm sure the thought process with the first one is, this is going well or just starting to go well. I don't want to lose the scheme. Mm-hmm. Because if she does blame Alfred, Alfred's the person that's selling and moving these items for her.
Mm-hmm.
So then she has to find another person to do that.
Sure. Again, not probably that hard. And also, she could just, like, I get that, like, she would have to give it up, but, like, honestly, man, like,
greed makes people do really dumb shit.
It does.
Really
indeed.
Stupid crime. Like, and okay, you've gotten away with it once, right? You've gotten away with, like, stealing all this shit. You've gotten away with murder. And now you sort of realize that Raya's on to it, I suppose.
But she's only on to Alfred, though.
Again,
like, nobody thinks Mrs. Shaw is involved.
No
yeah,
one.
She goes to Mrs. Shaw because she's like, I think I know, you know, what happened with these, because she finds a letter from, not a letter, but she finds like a piece of paper that had things listed on it from Dina.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the things that were missing that were specifically Anthony's, and Dina wanted to find them for him. She didn't like that he thought that she stole these from him. I mean, I wouldn't imagine she would, but you know what I mean? Like, they didn't always get along, but I think the fact that he thought so poorly of her because he thought she stole these things, I think that really bothered her.
Well, so again, Mrs. Shaw is a fucking dumbass.
Yeah.
Because she could have just played the, like, old lady who doesn't really understand what's going on and could have been like, oh, I feel so bad for him. He's got these confused thoughts in his head that she's in love with him and he stole all this stuff and I told him to give it back. Like, that, and then you walk away and yeah. no one will fucking know the difference. Like, why are you so stupid? Why are you so bad at crime?
I mean, I think the only... like maybe justification is if she's afraid Alfred would come back and be like, no, Mrs. Shaw was in on it. But of course all she'd have to do is be like, I wasn't. He's of course blaming me for it.
Yeah, he's a confused young man who's got gambling debts and yeah. can you really take
and
him
she's an
word?
Upstanding member of society as far as everybody around this is concerned. Like, nobody would have believed him over her,
right? So it doesn't make sense. And then, as if all that wasn't bad enough, she then goes, ah, I know what I shall do. I will tell you my entire plan to kill
yeah,
you.
She definitely like full on villain monologues. And I was kind of here for the villain monologue. I'm like,
well, I mean, I get it's a bit obviously prideful, right?
Yeah.
Like, you kind of want to finally be able to like tell somebody how good you are. Look at me. I was so awesome. But I love how after Strick comes and like stops her. And he asks Raya, like, are you okay? And she's like, I actually wasn't in any danger. Like, the only reason that she pulled it off with Dina is because she surprised her and she's an old woman. Like, all I had to do was just step to the right.
Yeah, she literally just, like, stepped to the side and was like, suck it, bitch. I'm in my 20s.
Yeah.
Well, again, bad at crime McGee here. She had her cornered where there was, like, nowhere for her to go except for out the fucking window and was like, look at this view. Oh, my God. Isn't it pretty? And all she had to do was be like, oops. But no, she's like, I've got to talk about this and how I'm going to kill you. And then when Strick shows up, she's like, I'm gonna push this motherfucker down the stairs.
Yeah. Which couldn't have been a very terribly long staircase. I imagine it was one of those that like it's a small set of stairs and then it turns and goes like not a ton down, you know, it's kind of gradually, because he didn't fall that many down that many stairs.
Well, it's
he just like kind of fell against a wall.
Yeah, it's the lantern tower of the abbey.
Yes.
Which I have to imagine is
narrow
and maybe only 2 or 3 stories high.
Yeah.
Because the big thing about the view is the abbey is on a hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's not the building was that big. It was just it's on a hill.
Yeah. So I agree with you kind of explaining the stairs. It's got to be like down a little landing, turn down a little landing. So he was fine.
Also, like, when
I think max there was maybe 10 stairs he fell down, and I don't even think it was that many.
Yeah, and this man forges and goes on architecture, like, digs. He's fine.
Well, and also, they made staircases a lot more narrow back then.
Yeah.
Especially when the abbey would have been built. And so, like, he probably, like, just hit his head on, like, the back wall and was like, oh, shit. Like, he couldn't go any further because if you sprawl the wrong way, there's no room for you to go.
I was gonna say, he could have put his hands out to either side and stopped himself instantly. Like, it couldn't have been very wide.
So, yeah, Mrs. Shaw, dumb bitch.
Yeah. She dumb bitch.
I don't like that we don't get to find out, like, what the consequences were for her. Like, obviously, I'm sure there are some, but, like, I could see Strick being like, look, did you try to kill my wife? Yeah, I'm pretty pissed about that. Did you steal my artifacts? Yeah, I'm not real happy about that. But like, also, you're an old bitch.
Yeah, except for the fact that she actually did murder somebody.
She did.
So
that's
she's
true.
Probably also dead.
Yeah, she's probably
getting
executed
for those
crimes.
Yeah.
Because not only did she murder somebody, but she murdered like
a
the
duchess.
Standing. Yeah, duchess of. I mean, she was probably the dowager duchess at that point because she's not
right,
the current duke's mother.
Right. But still.
Dowager yeah. duchess. She was married to a duke at one point.
Right.
I almost just said married to a duck.
Same thing.
Same diff.
No, but for real. Bad crimes, McGee. She pisses me off so bad. Because it's like, why are you so bad at this? Just don't do crimes then.
I do love that they didn't figure out that Albert was a bad guy until the mural was actually done. Like, the mural is finished when they kick him out.
Hey, he still got paid.
He did. Because they were like, what was it? It was something along the lines of, I don't, his mom shows up.
Oh yeah, she was a piece of work.
And she's like bitching at Raya, she's like, bitch, I paid him for his work and he is now free to go to other work. Get out of my face.
Yeah. I paid him very well. He's done. So he can leave.
Except he tried to fucking like kill Raya, which we find out at the end when he like collapses the what used to be the brewery, essentially. Yeah. But they turn into a tea house.
Board in the ceiling.
Yeah.
But also, Mr. Shaw is like, yeah, he fucked that up too.
Because he didn't want to hurt her. He was
too soft. I don't know. I also think that he's a really pathetic character because it's very clear Dina did not want anything romantic to happen there, but he's convinced they're in love.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very much that like syndrome of you believe a whole story about this person. And it's never something that happened.
Well, he is just sad in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Because the whole reason he's even in this scheme is because he owed like 50 pounds or something, I think they said.
Yeah.
In gambling debts. And Raya was like, that's like a lifetime's worth of money, dude.
Right.
What are you doing?
I don't know. Well, the other thing about him that's just so sad is he wants so desperately to rewrite history that he's like, oh yeah, the Duke killed her, and there's no evidence to support that whatsoever. It's very obviously Mrs. Shaw once all the puzzle pieces are in place, and he knows more information even than that, right? It's like, oh buddy.
Well, he's also trying to cover their own asses too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
with trying to redirect blame to the Duke.
Yeah.
He also likes Raya. He never confesses it, but I got the big impression he had a big old hard-on for Raya.
It kind of seemed like he was just trying to replace Dina with Raya, though.
Correct.
Like,
yeah, that's the vibe I got. So, can I switch our gears entirely?
Yeah. Of course.
One thing I really like that happened in this book that does not happen very often is they addressed her sadness, his sadness, in a way that wasn't just, we can fuck the pain away. And so one of the moments where they get caught up in it, and she's already made this commitment that she's going to go to New York, and he's trying to accept that very badly. And so they start getting amorous with each other, if you will. And they're in the middle of that when she just breaks down crying. And I appreciated that the author didn't just gloss over it in order to give us a nice steamy scene, a nice steamy goodbye. Like, it felt very real and raw, and I was very sad. I was like, oh no, so sad.
Well, and then he just like pulls her down to the floor and holds her while she cries
and breaks down crying with her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is, I mean, it's not nice, but it's nice the way it was done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I really liked that. The intimacy in this felt okay. One of the things that I would say of a book that we've read recently that I love is in Twisted Love, it was either they're having sex or they're not having sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no in between. There's no intimacy in between. And this, so much of the actual sex that was in the book was so much more enriched and exciting when it finally got to it, because there was intimacy all throughout the fucking book in a wide variety of ways. I really fucking liked that.
Well, it wasn't just like, oh, we hate each other, we hate each other, we hate each other. It's like, we are rivals or dislike or whatever, but also we have to work together. So then there's little moments of like Strick just being like, oh, let me just show you around the land. Come on. And just like those moments grew over time. Mm-hmm. So the teeter-totter?
Yes.
Of like hate to like / love. Just slowly tilted in the right direction.
Yeah.
They slowly had their inside things and their likes for each other, and the communication got better, although still horrible at times.
Yeah, I can forgive it a little bit just because of the time period.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when we meet Strickland, he's got a couple of friends. I'm going to guess, because this one came out in September of 2023, so it's probably going to be a little bit before the next book in this series comes out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess that her friends are, or his friends are going to be future Romeos, if you will.
I would assume because the Earl, I can't remember his actual name, has like this whole backstory where he went to America, got his heart ripped out, and yes. then is like all grumpy and crotchety now.
I'm assuming he's next.
I would hope so.
I hope so.
I'd be okay if it was Guy too. Like Guy's funny as shit. Number one, he was pushing for those two to get together almost as quickly as Deanna was. Like at one point he's the one who's like really pushing for Strickland to propose. There's a part, what sticks out in my mind, I'm paraphrasing of course, is he's like, well, you're gonna have to make a move, and he's like, you're right, I have to make a move. But one of the parts that was really, and this was the red herring, right, is Francis and Guy have Raya over to visit for mm-hmm. whatever reason. I think Francis is trying to be like, I'm an English lady and I'm better for Strickland than you and stupid bitchy shit. She doesn't sound like that, but she does in my head. But Raya decides needs to go off to the bathroom or whatever, or decides she wants to snoop. It's both.
She was going to the bathroom. She didn't go to the right place.
Right. And ends up coming across two of these goblets that she's had a conversation with Strickland about previously, that he was really disappointed that they disappeared because it was part of a set of three and he only had one left. And they're just randomly sitting in their fucking house. And Raya spots them and is like, what the fuck is this? What the fuck is this shit? Francis's reaction to that is, oh, that's super weird. And that's it. Like, she does nothing to, like, explain it at all, or just, like, I have no idea where those came from. And so the Strickland manages to perfectly show up at that time.
Of course.
And Raya's like, recognize these? And he gets visibly upset and whatever. And Francis just goes, go talk to Guy. What? It made no sense to me. It would drive me nuts. And then, like, Guy's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I would never take your goblets. I'm your best friend, bitch. And then as soon as Francis gets brought up, he's like, oh, you mean those goblets? Yeah. Yeah, I totally took those goblets.
Well, Francis and Guy seem to have this relationship where they will protect each other to the ends of the earth, mm-hmm. but they're never just going to talk to each other about it.
No, there was no discussion. Like, he literally just was like, yeah, sure, I did it. And he didn't talk to Francis about it.
Well, even when he does eventually admit to Strick that, no, he didn't take them, Strick's like, so Francis must have done it? And Guy's like, probably. I'm like, you could ask her.
Well, at one point, Strick even asks, like, well, what did Francis say when you confronted her? And he's like, I didn't do that.
Yeah, that would, no that way. Would crack why me up. I'm like, why didn't you talk to her? You're willing to go down for this. You at least need to know why.
I'm sorry. It's crazy.
Well, and then Strick believes Francis took them and is kind of just like, okay, whatever. And then Francis shows up and is like, listen, I did not take them. And he's like, okay, I believe you.
Yeah,
and
he forgave her. He like, he believed her way too quickly. That one caught me off guard. I'm like, but why though? Like,
well, and it does, you know, we talked about the miscommunication in this whole thing, but it does play up the miscommunication that's already happening between Raya and Strick, because she's like, what are you doing hugging that woman?
Right.
And then he's like, oh, I've been sworn to secrecy, so I can't tell you. So instead, I will seduce you, ma'am.
He does cover up a lot of things by being like, but what if we just fuck instead?
Yeah.
Yes. Which is a good strategy.
It's fair.
By the way, when she finds the goblets, there is this hilarious thing, because so I was listening to it and I was like, okay, she's going to smuggle these out. I was like, but she can't, how is she going to do that? She's going to end up breaking them. And then she has the full on conversation with herself about, well, I need to get these back to him. Like, can I hide them up my skirts? And, well, no, what if they fall? They're going to break. And I literally had the thought process right before it.
Yes.
I was going to kind of be a little upset at the book if it was like, oh, she just carries them out. I'm like, those are delicate, precious artifacts. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, they're made of like green glass or something. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But, you know, the author thought of that too. And I was like, good on you.
Yeah.
Good on
smart.
You.
The other thing I wanted to talk about, okay, and if neither one of you has any other notes, it feels like a good one to end on.
Love it.
Love it.
Is how much they wanted to fuck in a garden. They were really just like, I'm gonna plant flowers in this old abbey for you. Oh, you don't like those flowers? I'm gonna plant all purple flowers.
It's not that she didn't like them. He just asked what her favorite color was, and then he changed it. I was like, that seems like an expense that didn't need to be set.
They're like constantly trying to have this picnic. A fucknik, if you were.
I mean, I want a fucknik.
Yeah. And we just like keep failing at it for a variety of reasons. Like at one point he's like, oh, that bitch thinks I actually murdered her. Game's over.
Yeah.
And then they go back again, and I think they did successfully pull it off once, right? And then they were like, oh, we're going to do it in the Tower of the Abbey. Maybe that's the one where they successfully pull it off.
Yeah, maybe. Because they were going to do it that night in the Tower of the Abbey, and then he walks up with flowers to put in the Tower of the Abbey, and that's when Mrs. Shaw is trying to kill her.
Right.
And he like makes an entire bed of flowers for them to have sex on, and in my head I'm just like, that's not going to turn out as comfortable as you think, my guy.
There's going to be so many things in places they don't belong.
It will not be as pleasant as just putting a blanket down.
Well,
I promise
you.
Well,
and if they're all purple, they're going to get stained.
Oh, yes. Like they're
so they're going to come back looking like they got beat up.
Oh,
not
no.
Everything was well thought out in that situation. No.
I saw this one time where somebody was like, what? It was a friend's husband. He was like, what would you think if I did that? And it was like a trail of rose petals to the bathtub full of rose petals and stuff. And he had put it on Facebook joking with her. And I was like, who's cleaning it up?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And he goes, honey? And she goes, yeah, no, I have the same question.
Well, they're rich, so somebody else will.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're fine.
Yeah.
Also, it's in the Abbey. It can go. It can be dirty. Oh, well, they are going to do tours through it, aren't they?
Yeah. And
well, it's not like they're going to leave their undergarments just strewn about.
They you might.
Know their life.
They these might. Are sloppy people. They are sloppy. All right. Well, ratings time.
Oh, my gosh. Right to the end.
Let's do it.
Spice.
This was good spice.
It was good
and
spice.
And it was a decent quantity. And most of the spice was really high quality. So I'm going to give this a 4.
I am also going to give it a 4. It was also not the same thing over and over again.
Yes.
Except for that one phrase.
Except for that one phrase, which we will not mention again.
I was leaning more towards a 3.5. And that Fair is enough. Purely because I'm remembering what my 4s are. And they pretty much all have tail action. So
I mean...
Not everything has to have a tail.
Yes, yeah, it does.
But Himbos is in there as well.
Well, that's true.
Himbos.
I was only a 4 for you?
No, I don't remember what it was. But I will say today the audiobook for Gentleman Prefer Villain dropped. So that's what I'm doing.
I don't have the strength.
I'd already pre-ordered it. So Audible was like, it is time.
Butch. Butch. They have another character. That's a butch at the beginning. Please tell me.
No, it's Wolfie and Simon. And I think Simon has like a slightly French accent.
Oh.
So it's Simon?
I think so.
Alrighty. So a romance. Wow. We got real quiet in here. There's a lot of thoughts floating through the air.
3? I liked the amount of time that they like spent with each other, actually getting to know each other. I wish the communication was better, but that is also like part of the why things get fucked up is because they don't communicate. And he did plant a whole field of wildflowers for her twice.
Well, he didn't. He had somebody.
Yeah, he
do
had
it.
Somebody. Yes. Do
it does
it
definitely
for him.
Take the romance out of it when you just can order somebody to do it.
He also like gave her part of his collection for her to wear. There were very cute things.
That scene where he was just like
dressing her in gold.
Oh, I know.
I can't believe we didn't talk about that scene. Holy shit, it was hot.
Yeah.
You got a mirror. Okay, so here's what you got to look forward to when you read this. You got a mirror scene. You got a guy who's like, you are my queen. I'm going to dress you in gold. You got all kinds of sexy times.
Mm-hmm. The best in the mirror scene, though, is he's behind her, you know, giving her all the attention.
Yes.
And so she's like,
in every place.
Oh, I'm going to close my eyes to really enjoy this. And he's like, no, it's better when you watch.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, boy.
Yes.
Sir.
My guy.
Yes.
I could maybe now be convinced that my spice rating is a 4. I forgot. I forgot about that scene because we didn't talk about it. I can't believe
we didn't talk about it. It was great.
It was a great
scene. And it's really nice because it touched on like the cultural aspect that she was coming from as a Palestinian woman, that apparently it's a tradition to have a groom dress his bride in gold.
Yeah.
And oh God, he has this great line where she's talking about that. And she says that sometimes the mother-in-law or sister-in-law has to help. And he goes, I don't need any help dressing you in gold. And I was like,
And then he just starts like layering bracelets and necklaces and rings on her after he takes her out of the dress. Let me tell you, he is doing this while she is naked.
Mm. Oh, so good.
Oh,
so good. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
So your romance rating is what?
Oh. sorry. My mind is elsewhere. I think a 3.5. I think I'm going to land there.
I think that's where I'm going to land too. I think it really, if we had a little bit of after they actually get married.
Yeah.
I think I could easily have been pushed into a 4, but the romance is just really rocky for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes together that quickly, I need a little bit more.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. So overall.
Yeah.
I give this a 3.5. I really liked this book. I didn't think I was going to be like, oh, this is good. But I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. I did land on a 3.5 as well.
I teetered so much in between a 3.5 and a 4 because I'm like, okay, but this is doing things for me.
Oh, yeah. No, it did things for me. I also teetered on a 3.5 or a 4. I had to like really think about it, but I don't think it's quite enough to push it to a 4 for me.
That's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, it's missing like just a couple of things that could have been improved on, and then we easily could have gone to a 4.
Like, I know I won't rate it this way because I know it's annoying, but if I could do a 3.75, that's where it lands for me, right? Mm-hmm. So I think I'll just make it a unanimous 3.5, but that does not mean I didn't like the book. It's not that kind of 3.5. Like, it's really solid. I just needed like a little bit more, and for it being a very short book, it had room. It could have gone a little bit more.
Yeah,
right.
You know, and there were a few issues with the writing that we talked about that just make it really hard for me to give it a 4, but very good, lots of fun.
Oh, I'm super excited for whatever the next book in this series
is. I'm probably going to go to her other series and check them out.
Fair.
Because, you know, good.
That brings us to recommendations.
So I'm going to go with one I've recommended before. I don't like to do it, and I don't do it very often. But this is, if you like this, you're going to fucking love The Bride by Julie Garwood. Like, there's a whole, there's the mystery plot that's right in alignment. There's sort of like a forced marriage. Well, not sort of. There is a forced marriage situation where they're separated from other people. It's a different time period. I want to be clear. It's like way, way farther back than the Victorian era. Back when they're like practically Vikings. They're not. But it is pretty far back. And it's just really, really in alignment with the storytelling style.
Cool. Danny?
I am going to go with Watch Downton Abbey.
That's my other thought.
Yep.
Same mind.
There is a lot of the like intrigue of I'm ruined. And, you know, I mean, she didn't give a shit about this in that book, but there was definitely a I'm ruined situation in Downton Abbey. There is the intrigue with the help in the situation. There's a lot of things that are very much a thing in Downton Abbey.
Well, they also spend a lot of time in Downton Abbey dealing with having to modernize.
Correct.
Or not. And so that feels very in line.
And how to take care of a building that is basically crumbling around itself, because that's also a big thing, is that Downton Abbey is a money pit.
Yeah.
Well, deteriorating building and property and deteriorating title.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I am beyond shocked that neither of you said The Viscount Who Loved Me.
That was my other one.
Oh, did you have another one?
No. That was the other one I thought of.
Oh, okay.
But then Downton Abbey.
You were going to say it.
Yeah.
I specifically read a different fucking book so that one of you could say it.
I was about to say it, and then for some reason, Downton Abbey jumped in my head. No, fucking Downton Abbey.
I literally was like, one of these bitches is going to pick the Viscount, so you have to pick a book. Do you have a book in your bookcase that has to do with dukes? And I picked one. And surprisingly, it actually does work really well as a recommendation.
I'm sorry, The Bride is a better book recommendation for this book. It just is.
I think the Viscount makes a lot of sense, though, for
it
this
book. It absolutely does.
But it doesn't have a murder mystery.
No, it doesn't. It does not. So the other book that I would recommend is After Dark with the Duke by Julie Ann Long, which is about a disgraced opera singer who is trying to hide from like a mob of people who are yelling harlot at her and shit. And so she goes to this boarding house, and there is a duke who is also staying at this boarding house because he's trying to write a book and it's too loud in his London townhouse.
Fair enough.
And they just bicker throughout most of it until eventually the ladies of the boarding house are like, you guys need to stop this shit. And so then he tries to teach her Italian because as an opera singer, she should probably be beneficial to know Italian, but she doesn't. And, you know, so those lessons, those little quiet, cute moments just turn into more and more and more. And then they fuck a lot.
Mm, yes.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. So that's nice.
It is.
Yeah. That's my recommendations.
All right.
So that brings us to the end, folks. If you like this episode, please find us out there on all the socials at Wrong Dust Jackets on TikTok, Instagram, Threads, YouTube, Pinterest, pretty much everywhere. Or you can find us out on our website at wrongdustjackets.com. Check out our blog. We have all sorts of other book reviews on that. And if you can, give us 5 stars on whatever podcast listening app you're listening to. If that app has the ability to give reviews, I think Apple Podcast does. Mm-hmm. Drop a review, even if it's only like, I like this. That's fine. That's fine.
Love to hear it.
Or just tell us what books you're interested in us covering, because odds are we fucking will.
Yes, it's true. Please, we would love to hear from you, no matter how much or how little you have to say. All right, that's it. Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.